The Shire of Nanap would like to acknowledge the Wurundjeri and Boonwurrung people of the Noongar Nation as the traditional custodians of the land of which this podcast is recorded on, and we extend our respect to the Elders past and present, and we extend that respect to all Aboriginal Australians living within the Shire of Nanap.
Everything changed. You know, people don't like change, but I found it was the only way we could survive was to continue to embrace what the music industry outside of Nanap was doing.
This is the Nanap Oral History Podcast. Wendy Slee and Heather Walford join us this morning in the cute little cottage the Nanap Music Club calls its headquarters. Wendy and Heather delight us with easy-flowing chatter about the evolution of the festival, the delights of it being a weekend of discovery, and how it's grown to become a cultural celebration, celebrating diversity both on stage and through its committee over the years. This episode also pays respect to both the timber industry and Nanap's alternate lifestylers and remarks on how things evolve for sustainability and survival. So we're here at the Nanap Music Club's home talking to Wendy and Heather. So thanks so much for joining us today.
I'm Wendy. I'm currently the chairperson, which is quite an honour for me. I've been involved for about 12 years, first few years as a volunteer and then 10 years on committee. I actually got involved because my daughter's a singer, and it's an interesting concept. She's been an artist a few times on the program at Nanap, and people might go, oh, your daughter sings at Nanap because her mum's on the committee. It's the other way around. Her mum's on the committee because she got to sing at Nanap. Phaedra spotted Maya busking when she was very young and very nervous, and she gave her all the support in the world and offered her a chance to sing the following year at the festival if she worked hard and applied, and that's what she did. So I was a bit impressed with that degree of support for a young artist. So when I saw that, I said, what can I do to help? And she said, join our committee. And I love supporting emerging artists and young people and new talent and remote and community artists. So that's what really brought me onto the committee.
Hello, I'm Heather Walford. I joined the Nanap Music Festival in 2000 after the last committee had disintegrated, or just natural, there's a natural time span for most committees. And anyway, so they had all resigned, all of them, and the community wasn't sure what was going to happen, but a group of people decided to get together and have a go. It was made up of many of the alternative lifestylers that had moved to Nanap in the 70s, and many of them had been involved right at the beginning when it first started, when Bernie Wilborn started the festival. And so they wanted to bring it back to its roots because it had been contracted. The artist selection had been contracted out. That was one of the main things they wanted to achieve, was for the Nanap community to take it back, but also for the selections and the artistic choices to be made in Nanap. That's when I came on board, because I had moved to Nanap in 96 and had been to one festival and had seen what had happened and was quite amazed by the event itself. Not that I had ever been interested in folk music before. And then so I decided that, yeah, why not? I'll jump on board. So in 2000 I came on board to help organise the Nanap Music Festival 2001, which, was an amazing journey for me.
I would really love to know from your perspectives the journey that the music festival's been on. I know you touched a little bit on the beginning, but really the beginning to now is a huge journey. Can you share it with us?
It began in somebody's lounge room, really. Bernie and Rubella Wilborn were folk music lovers, and they were enjoying the Southwest Folk Festival annually, which was held in Busselton one year, I think, and Albany the second year, and it alternated. And when that folded, they were a bit frustrated by not having folk music, and they decided, why don't we do something here in our own lounge room and invite a few artists to perform? So I think they started the music club in 1988, and then they had artists come down once a month and people would gather just to listen to strictly folk music. And it was about 1989 they were looking at trying to start their first festival, which they set up in the town of Nanup for the centenary celebrations in 89-90, coincided it with the 100-year centenary celebrations. They had the, you know, the woodcutters and the bell ringers and the magicians and all kinds of things that went on in the main streets of Nanup. This is a quote from Bernie Wilborn. He said, "I had considered the idea of a festival in Nanup for a couple of years before I decided it might be possible, with the support the Nanup Music Club was getting, to start a small festival along the lines of what the Southwest Folk Festival was. The Nanup Music Club had been called a music club rather than a folk club, with the aim of attracting locals and people who liked other music. So people who might be interested in country, blues, jazz and rock rather than just, as he calls it, finger-in-the-ear folk music. This didn't really work as the content of the monthly performances we were having hardly ever contained any of the other genres of music. So when the festival was named, it became the Southwest Folk Festival." So originally Nanup Music Festival was tagged the Southwest Folk Festival, but that didn't stick for long, I don't believe. "The first festival was timed to coincide with the centenary celebrations commemorating the establishment of Nanup as a town in 1890. And so at Easter 1990, it all happened. The organisers for the event were myself and Yvonne Harris in Nanup, with Barbara Stevenson and my sister Rosemary Robertson in Perth, coordinating the adult performers and children's performers respectively. Approximately 700 people came to Nanup for the first festival, and it was held in the existing venues, the Town Hall, the Lesser Hall, the RSL Hall and the Recreation Centre. As well, there were tourists who were here for the centenary celebrations, so the town was really busy. There were street stalls and street entertainment, and the whole thing was laid back and destined to be a success. Alison Cassinet also shares memories of the earlier events. At the first festival, Nanup's own brilliant bush band Thunderbox played up a storm in the town hall for popular bush dancers. Interestingly, Kevin Inkster, the banjo player and former proprietor of the Blackwood Cafe, returned to the festival in 2001 riding his latest invention down the main street in the parade, an airboard. This had been on global display at the opening night of the Sydney Olympics."
The Kevin Inkster thing was 2001. Yes. We called 2001 a musical odyssey. It was the first time that we'd all sort of got together after. So there's a real shift in who managed the festival and what it was all about at that point. So Kevin Inkster, having been one of the original alternative settlers in Nanup, had become quite well known. And, so we managed to be able to get the boards, which was just amazing. And really set us up, I think.
Yeah, there's just so many pieces that have been handed to me with all the stories of people who remembered the earlier festivals, who was performing, some of the other things that went on at the festival, like the Bob Britton who did the post and rail fence and taught people how to make post and rail fences. So
there was always a strong element of that kind of thing, some artistic creativeness coming through in the early days.
What are some other?
I think it was 2003 when we contracted a chainsaw sculpture, and I can't remember his name, Flint Edwards, to come and create an ice sculpture at the festival, and it must have been 2002 then. So the following year he came back. And he was the one that sculpted the tiger that's on the corner next to the main roads board building. And that was a log that was quickly found. We had our eye on one log, but that disappeared somewhere, and so John McGinty found another one. And, yeah, Flint sculpted that tiger that's been there ever since 2003. It's quite a hit.
Oh, I didn't realise that was part of the festival.
Yeah, and his ice sculptures were fantastic. He did a saxophone one year and yeah, it was amazing. Of course, it didn't last long because it was so hot.
So where were they displayed?
So, I remember it being in front of the Caravan Park office, which at that stage was the Nanup Visitor Centre, and everything was focused around between the visitor centre, the old policeman's house next door. We had as a volunteer centre, and then eventually we moved it across to the telecentre, which is now the community resource centre, but back then it was the telecentre, and we made that the office. So when we took over in 2000, the festival was mainly held in a really enormous marquee on what is now called the Village Green, and the Town Hall and the RSL Hall. I don't think it was ever, in my memory, ever had anything up at the sport and rec centre because it would have been too far. It was hard enough getting people to go up to the RSL Hall.
I think that was just the first festival they used the rec centre for the bush dance.
That's what that makes sense, yeah.
Yeah, because he said there was nowhere big enough undercover. Yes, I remember, I think when I started, the committee was meeting in where the CRC had been at the Arts Centre in that little office at the back, and Fabia was out the front.
We met often at the Good Food Shop, which is now Pickle & O, because John McGinty's wife, Caroline, ran that, and we would meet in there.
If we talk about the locations of where you've moved, where did you start and then get to all of these different locations?
Well, it would have started in Bernie and Rubella's lounge room, Drybrook.
Bed and breakfast, yeah. Next to Holbury House. Right there, yeah.
And then from there it's progressed?
Yeah, I think depending on who was the chairperson and who was managing the festival at that time, I think Prue Pocock and Tony Pocock was... prior to when I came in on it, and they would have been meeting probably at the visitors' centre. I think they were, yeah, because that's where Prue and Tony lived next door in the old policeman's house, and then the visitor centre was where the Caravan Park is now, office is now. So, yeah, I think that's where they would have mainly met. And then when we took over, there was lounge rooms as well. But, and Good Food Shop and probably the community resort, the telecentre, because I was running that at the time, so.
And then in more recent years, you've gone where?
When we bought this property, that's when we were in the office down at the Art Centre. What's the Art Centre now? It was the CRC. And so then we moved in here. So we've had our own space. As you can tell, it's not glamorous, but it's kind of very much... us, I guess. It's quite unique and full of character.
So what year did you move here?
2018 we bought this place.
That was a big move and something we could only have ever dreamed about, I think, at the time, that, you know, that the festival would have enough funds and wherewithal to be able to purchase a building to run everything from.
And it's really interesting. It says a lot for how everything has changed, because when I first joined, it was very much the community run, all the local people were on the committee. But I can remember about the second or third year I was there, each year it was a struggle to make ends meet, to pay the expenses, put on the artists we wanted. And we were told by our financial advisor or treasurer at the time, I don't think you're going to have another festival. This is really the end. You're not going to be able to make ends meet to put on another event. And so we cut costs on everything. We got more volunteers donating time and efforts, and we put on another festival, and somehow that just managed to break even, or there was a little bit left over and we picked up again. And with careful choices with the artists that we brought in, we managed to just pick up and carry on, and bit by bit we were putting money away each year then so that we had the following festival guaranteed. I think we also had the help of some really good, strong financial advice as well with how to do things. We had to put ticket prices up and everything changed. You know, people don't like change, but I found it was the only way we could survive was to continue to embrace what the music industry outside of Nanup was doing. try to be better at what we did, to bring in artists that people would relate to and connect with. And, yeah, so I look at the journey even in the 10 years I've been involved, and it's phenomenal from those first few years where we didn't know if we could even make it to the next year's festival.
Even with these changes, you know, the committee changes you were talking about, trying to bring everything back to its roots, even with the journey that's happened, do you feel like that sort of mission stayed strong?
I think so, yeah. I think with Phaedra being the person that took over from me, with the artists, I think that's still quite strong.
The vision is to bring in not headline acts, which is what predominantly live music industry and big festivals rely on, headline acts to get people in. What I think we've done, and I give all credit to Phaedra for this, is that she brings in bands and artists that people relate to and connect with, even if they've never heard of them. And bit by bit over the years, our audience has come back every year because they know they're going to discover something new, and there's something they take away feeling a sense of pride for discovering somebody new, a new artist, a new band. So they come back because they know they can sit at any venue and find an amazing artist that becomes a new favourite. Or
I've never heard it described like that, but a weekend of discovery makes a lot more sense now.
I think that's also the key to us, our survival to date, in an industry that's, as you can tell, there's been that many festivals cancelled that have stopped running. And I wonder what is our key, the key to what we do. And I think it is actually that we have no headline acts. We don't rely on that. We rely on the audiences trusting us to give them something new they will discover and enjoy. And we've got so many returning audiences now and ticket buyers that that pretty much solidifies what I'm saying, is that they come back.
Yeah, I think that's very true. And when we were running it, we did talk a lot to Fairbridge Festival, which was a bit bigger than us and really going places at that point. And they were very much saying, we don't do headliners, we just... I mean, they kind of did, but they were very much promoting the fact that it was an experience, it was a weekend, that you camped, you were really part of it. So we looked at that, but we just struggled to get people to come to break that break into people's psyche and let them know what they were going to get. That was hard. So when we were running it, we did go for the headliner,
and I think that was perfect because you set the foundations for people to come, but then we slowly dropped away from the headliners.
I think it was a step that needed to be taken in order to bring different audiences. So we were the ones behind, or we started with Joe Camilleri, 2002, and I finished off with Ben Lee in 2009, and that was for me, that was a story, because who would have ever thought you'd be able to get someone? And that was when he was at his peak, and the reason why we got him was because I noticed he was playing at King's Park the day before, and I rang the management to say, would he come down to Nanup on the Sunday? Thinking, why would he, you know, and he did. Yeah. So shock, horror, yeah. How are we going to pay for him? But we did, so, yeah. That's the ticket sales. And I think sometimes there's a few steps to get to.
And I think that's exactly right. I'm not saying that we would have got where we were doing no headline acts all the way through. People would not have come here in the first place, but you got them to discover Nanup and the beauty of hearing live music in this setting.
And our dream would have been to have had a sold-out concert, which Phaedra pulled off when she got John Butler to come.
Okay, yeah, that was
amazing.
Before my time.
Yeah, yeah. That would have been our dream. Yeah. We were going, oh, I wonder what it would be like to sell out. Gee, that would be very exciting.
And we've had a couple of years while I've been on committee where we've sold out. I think there was one year we sold out the first day the tickets went. And it was really hard because you had people arriving here on the weekend of the festival expecting to be able to buy day tickets, and we had to say there isn't any left. But, yeah, when it comes to headline acts, we've had a lot of artists come here and perform who were unheard of, who have then gone on to become global superstars. So Kate Miller-Heike sang here before she was well-known. And Passenger was here. Claire Bowditch, amazing names. We had Tash Sultana perform here 1 year and she was unheard of, and we booked her for the second year, but by the time the second year came around, we couldn't afford her. So we ended up, she did do one concert here and that was quite phenomenal. So it was a packed out amphitheatre down there for Tash's set. I'm trying to think who else. So we had Archie Roach as well.
Oh, we've had some fantastic people. And then there's some people that you may not know but, you know, just blew the audience away. And yeah, I just can't remember all of the acts now, but they were, yeah.
There's been a whole chain of artists who unheard of or unknown to most people, but they blow the audience away. And you've only got to walk up and down the streets here at each festival and people go, oh, my God, last night at the town hall, or did you see that artist at the amphitheatre? And it's like this conversation of people exclaiming over some new discovery. Even myself walking down here when I'm running back and forth working at night, and I'll hear these vocals coming from like the secret garden, you go, my God, who is that? And I don't always know what's on the program, so I have to run in for a look.
Mm.
And then it's like,
well, was John Butler Trio unknown when he came here and sold out?
No. The trio, and we didn't get the trio, we just got John.
Okay, just John. Fabulous.
And that was because Phaedra had been helping out at the Busselton, I can't remember what that festival was called in Busselton. And he appeared
Southbound,
that's right. Yep. And she was in the, what's the, green room, right, and she kept befriending them and talking to them and, yeah. So that really made a huge difference. He said he would come, but he wouldn't come with the trio because that would have been way too expensive. We got John. That was a game changer, I'm sure. So it's interesting, some of the people that we've got. But I think that first foray into contacting these huge artistic managers in Sydney and, you know, who's coming, who's around, that sort of thing. Yeah, we started to grow and get more confident as to, you know, well, why not? We'll just ask, see what happens. What could happen? You know, they could say no, but they might say yes.
It's amazing. Did you ever get anyone go, why would we want to come to NANUP, or where is NANUP?
Oh, well, yes, they might say that. But, but no, they were up for anything, you know. Like most of them were just, if they could fit it in, they'd have a look at the feedback from previous festivals and, I think we had a pretty good rep.
And that rep's just grown and grown. We should talk about that because obviously it's an experience being in NANUP for the weekend. What reputation would you say the NANUP Music Festival holds?
From what I've gathered over 10 years and talking to artists, this is their favourite festival. And I don't know whether that's just something they say to us and they probably say it to others, but I actually do feel it's a really sincere comment. They feel valued and welcomed and supported when they come here and loved, and it's quite a laid-back atmosphere. Plus it's a beautiful setting, the hills, the forest, the river. There's so many things that factor in, but they are valued, and a lot of that is also Phaedra's ethos is supporting artists, and that's a comment that I often make when we talk about, as a NANUP festival, we want to do good by the community and support local businesses and as much as possible, but it's good to see our festival ethos is to support emerging artists and young new artists and the remote Indigenous artists from remote communities, especially Aboriginal bands and unheard of bands that are discovered by coming down south to more built up areas to do festival performances. So I think that's something that we offer the music industry is a platform for a lot of unknown. We have the Emerging Artist Award each year, which promotes 10 unheard of artists and gives them the opportunity to win recording time and get more exposure for their music. And then last year was the first year of the RAD program. We got a massive grant from the WA government through the Live Music Fund, and it was to bring in an Aboriginal band, a remote unknown Aboriginal band from one of the communities, and have a mentor Indigenous band support them and guide them through the process of coming down to the festival, recording their music and performing on stage. So the festival just gone, we had the Kiwikara band and the Family Shoveler band were the mentors. And next year, Kiwikara band will mentor another band that Phaedra and the committee for that program bring in. So every year I notice we have a lot of Indigenous acts and they are always top level. Everybody loves them, whether it's dance music or heartfelt, soulful solo performances. There's a lot of support in our festival for the Indigenous musicians.
What people like about the Nanup Music Festival, I always thought it was the small town feel. Like if you think about people going to large festivals and feeling overwhelmed by, you know, the majesty of some of the performers. But in Nanup, I think everyone, the performers are just walking down the street. You can stop them and chat to them if you want to. People just, you know, there isn't this them and us. The performers are everywhere. Mm-hmm. And I think people really feel that small town thing where everyone's accessible. You know, there's none of this you're better than me sort of thing. Everyone's welcome.
The artists all stay in local accommodation or boarding, you know, like bed and breakfast or even in the campground, and they jam with the other musicians. So even if they're from interstate, they come and jam with the locals. Often and so often at Nanup you see this artist has got on stage with this artist. They've met at the festival and they do a song together, and that's pure magic. That is just one of the most iconic type of things that people get to experience when they come to our festival, is watching the collaborations that just unfold organically, and it's always amazing.
The experiences you have at the festival, they're magic.
One such time, Steve Poles, I hope I pronounce his surname correct, he was a Canadian singer that came out quite a few years ago, and I didn't know much about him, but he was standing backstage at the amphitheatre, and there was a young artist from Darwin called Stevie Jean, and she sang an amazing set. She had a stunning voice, and at one point she sang a song and she goes, "This artist is my favourite artist. She inspired me." I believe it was a Canadian singer. I can't remember the name of this artist that inspired her. So she sang this song, and when she came off stage, Steve walked up to her and he goes, "I loved your set." He goes, "That artist that inspired you, she's a friend of mine back in Canada." And he goes, "I videoed your performance and sent that to her live, or, you know, I did sent it to her live so she could hear you, and she was blown away by it." And I was just watching this. I got such goosebumps. And then later on I found out, I watched him with Stevie Jean. He sat down and they jammed together, and she got on stage with him. And it turned out that Steve was the manager and songwriter for Jewel, the Canadian singer Jewel. So he had Stevie Jean singing Jewel songs with him, and they did a song on stage together. And it was like phenomenal. You would remember when Jimmy Barnes turned up at the festival.
Oh, God, yes, that was so exciting. So he's, he was good friends with what's
the play? The Pigram Brothers.
The Pigram Brothers, that's right. And so I had a coffee stall at the main venue, and there was this kind of whispering going around, "Jimmy Barnes is here, Jimmy Barnes is here." And then all of a sudden he popped up at the bloody coffee stall and he wanted a coffee. we're all going, "Oh, my God, it's Jimmy Barnes." It's very exciting.
Yeah, I believe one of the Pigram brothers in the family had died in the lead up to the festival, but they decided they would come anyway. So Jimmy Barnes was a good friend of theirs, and as a sign of support, he turned up down here, and I believe he got on stage with them. So that would have been quite an eye-opener for people.
Yeah.
Surprise.
Yeah. What a special, special surprise. But is there anything from your perspective that you really wanted to share? I know there was quotes and posters.
There is so much information, and I feel like that's overwhelming. And
well, I did want to ask before we finish, what has the Nanup Music Festival brought to Nanup?
A belief in that they can make a difference, in that they can open their arms up to the world outside Nanup, and they will come. Yeah, I think we have definitely shown that. Well, just me personally, having been involved with the music festival and going on to also be involved with the flower festival, you know, gave me the confidence to approach Costa and get him to come to Nanup. So, you know, it's like, well, people want to come to Nanup, don't they?
Sense of pride. Yeah, pride. I think pride and just being really proud of where you live and who you are, the identity of the town. It's one of the things we strive for with our festival is we don't want to be bigger. We don't want to be a big event. We want to be better. We
want to be kinder,
yeah, and sustainable. We see how already it pushes the boundaries of all the facilities and utilities in Nanup, and we don't want to put pressure on things. We just want to get better at what we do, to be sustainable, to be more green, if that's the right term, just to do right by as many people as possible. So all the different elements of our festival, the local, the industry, the contractors, the volunteers, the audiences. Our debrief meetings are huge, trying to work out what we can do better.
It's a huge stimulus to the economy. That's and correct. That lasts more than just the weekend that the festival is on. People come back to revisit Nanup at different times of the year. And so many people who do come at different times of the year talk about having been to the music festival and how wonderful it was, yeah. Or that they've heard about it and they really, really want to come. What time of year is it on, you know? So it has got a good reputation, and so it's definitely an economic driver and a cultural driver. It's a real cultural thing for Nanup when, you know, we do have some very quiet times of the year where there's not much going on, but certainly that long weekend, it really opens up our eyes, doesn't it?
And I think too, Nanup's become quite open to having events. You have the Flower and Garden and the Music Festival, and now we have all these cycle races like the UCI Gravel World Championships. You've got the big event next year.
Yeah, we're confident. We've just we had know one. We can do it.
Yeah, yeah. And it's testing the waters for all these other things that happen. And the town may no longer have a mill and a timber industry as it once did, and now it's got the opportunities for so many other industries and things to do with tourism. And yeah, so hopefully our events open those doors for the locals as well.
Heather, you've got a lot of knowledge about Nanup history and how things have changed over time. What do you think the alternate lifestyle has brought to Nanup? And can you tell us about them?
Yeah, and it makes us different from other communities that didn't have alternative lifestylers or hippies, as we used to call them. But the reason why they came to Nanup was because in the 70s the Vietnam War was on. It was one of those times when life was changing very quickly, and what people thought was acceptable and normal society, people were saying, no, I don't want that. Especially women, I suppose, and people who were highly educated were saying, no, I don't want that kind of life. That's not the kind of life I want. I want to live sustainably. So people were looking for places to go, and there were settlers in Margaret River, Nanup, Denmark. And in Nanup, people bought property and they brought them together. So where I live in Carlotta, so 10 people bought a big farm and they broke it up into 10 lots. They paid $3,000 each for 10 acres. And they all helped each other build houses. So in our little community where we are, there's a rammed earth, there's a mud brick, there's a straw bale, there's just such a range of houses. And those people were integral in making changes in Nanup and bringing. So they came in, they weren't well liked by the local community because their children ran around without shoes and, you know, they didn't have jobs and, yeah, you know, all sorts of things which were stereotypical, but I think Nanup's very lucky to have had them make Nanup their home, because they, you know, before they came, there was no coffee shop. You know, Kevin Inkster started the Blackwood Cafe. That was a game changer in Nanup, I think. And then Carolyn McGinty and John McGinty, it was Di G and Brian G that started Crafty Creations and the coffee shop next door to that. The furniture, people came in making furniture, Phil Anderson. Dave Lewis and the Lewis saw, another invention, you know, mobile saw milling, you know, because he was, you know, these very bright people came into town, and although they looked wild to the locals, they were, I mean, Jeff Nugent, amazing person, you know, all around the world with his permaculture. So, you know, they're just, they're quietly doing their thing, and they've made a big difference. So all those people came in the 70s for whatever reason, different reasons, and they stayed. And one of them did tell me that they felt that the flood of 1982 really helped move people, because they were trapped together for 3 days in the town, and they all had to work together. The farmers, the foresters, and the hip and the alternative lifestylers, and I think that brought them together, and they learned a bit from each other, and that they needed each other, and then they moved on from there. So
life's good at doing things like that to people, isn't it?
Yeah.
So that's a really good way of looking at how the people bring their passions to the town, and they might not readily be accepted immediately, but they help change the identity, but build even more dimensions to the town. It's like Bernie and Rubella came to the town with their love for folk music, and who'd have thought that they planted that seed, and look how it's grown. And now it's a multi-genre music festival. It's not just folk. Well,
yeah, from small things, big things grow.
That's right. So it's just all these people that come to town that aren't timber industry driven or farming.
What it does say is that diversity is really important.
It is.
And that's really helped the town a lot. Yeah, although it may have caused a bit of friction initially.
Probably always will.
But I think it's really important that and it builds acceptance and tolerance and all that sort of lovely stuff.
I've lived in a lot of towns before I got to Nanup, and when I first moved here I was like, it's not like other towns. Everyone welcomes you. Everyone. That's how I felt when I got here. So maybe off the back of what you're talking about, there's been a lot of acceptance.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So,
like, well, it'd be nice if people come to town and people who live here look and go, I wonder what they're bringing to the table. And that's a nice way to see newcomers to a town, is to welcome them and give them that opportunity. Who are you? Show us what you've got. Show us who you are. Because when the town gets too big, you lose that ability to see all the new people coming in, or there's too many and it becomes quite chaotic and stressful. Whereas Nanup still stays beautifully Nanup. Could you imagine the timber industry, and then you've got a lot of people who are greenies who don't want the logging, and what a place to meet. It's like...
But it was so funny. They were very tolerant of each other, really, when I came in 96, because that's when it was all happening. You know, people were up trees and protesting, and the government was going to shut it down. We knew that was going to happen. 98, they started on the way to that. But people would be taking food out to these people, you know, people you wouldn't think would do it, but yes, they were. So, you know, yes, we did support the timber industry when we needed it, but we knew it was ending as well. So
it's an evolution and survival.
And change is hard, and... Yeah, so you've got to accept that it's going to take a bit, and some people will not find their way, I guess. But I think we now have a way, so I'm really looking forward to see the future, really, what happens there. Mm. I love the fact that the biking events and the cycling is opening up the forest to something really sustainable and proactive, where we are admiring the trees and not cutting them down, yeah.
Same. I couldn't agree more, Heather.
Yeah, it's a beautiful way to put it. Wendy and Heather, thank you so much for sharing your time and experiences with us today. It's been great having conversations with you both.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
You've been listening to the Nanup Oral History Podcast. If you are not a Nanupian, please come and visit our small town. We would love you to come. If you are a Nanupian, please share it with your family and friends. We're really proud of this, and we hope you are too. This- This podcast was made possible through the successful funding by the Department of Community's Age Friendly Community Program, facilitated through the local government's professionals and supported by the Shire of Nanup. We would like to thank all of those who have shared their stories to make this podcast happen. The podcast has been produced by the Shire of Nanup's Economic and Community Development Team and edited by Simple Ben Stories.